Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I went for a walk this morning. It's unseasonably warm. It's clear and bright and lovely. I saw this tweet where someone was like, do I really just need to go for a walk in the morning and it changes my mood all day? That's so annoying.
Yeah.
Like stupid
brands.
But
it's kind of true. It's kind of true.
Yeah. I mean, just as soon as I hit like the path and started walking, I was just like, I do feel better than like 3 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I should do that more, actually. I mean, because we have
That's not the lesson here.
Oh, no?
The lesson here is that it's annoying.
Okay. Okay. I should be annoyed then. We are clinging on to the last little bit of fall, it feels like here. Snow is supposed to come tomorrow, I think. And then I think it's all just miserable from here on out in Minnesota.
So. Yeah. Well, it's too bad you can't work remotely.
No. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
So no sympathy for you, I'm afraid, actually.
Yeah. My boss is a jerk. He doesn't let me do that.
So. Oh, damn. I should quit.
Yeah.
So I saw a great idea, which maybe you already have, but this was new to me on Twitter. Someone saying that you should make a way for SavvyCal to accept Calendly links.
Oh, yeah.
And then just like figure out the availability between the two tools and then just book the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I love that.
I've had like a note on just kind of an exploratory doc about this, I think since almost the very first like few months of working on SavvyCal, like that idea got floated. And I think it could actually be somewhat feasible. I've done a little bit of sleuthing on like the background API calls that happen on a Calendly link. And there appear to be some queries where you can just say like between this range and this range, give me all the slots in a nice programmatic fashion. So it could be pretty interesting. I don't know if it's would be brittle, but might be worth taking on a little bit of brittleness to provide that kind of value, you know?
Yeah. I know I said this before, but like I'm into you picking fights.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's good. Like you're punching up. There's the giant gorilla that everybody knows. Like, it's not going to be a bad look. It'd be hard to do it in a way that would be a bad look. It's fun. It's like a fun thing to like root for the little guy. And it's convenient. Like if somebody sends me a Calendly link, I would rather just have it automatically like SavvyCal figure it out. Like it's actually a good feature, I think.
Yeah, totally. I don't feel like it's out of bounds or like not fair game to potentially do that because it reminds me a little bit of when I was running that buy out your Calendly subscription promotion, you know, a couple of people like kind of fired back at it. They're like, well, what if Calendly just did the same thing to you? And I was like, they probably should. Like, honestly, it's like the like if someone really wants to switch, then giving your customers an escape hatch seems like a good thing to do. It's like I wouldn't care if they did that, you know.
I don't understand why you stopped doing that.
I didn't stop doing it. I just haven't pushed it lately, but
I don't understand why you stopped that.
Yeah. I mean, I need to probably refresh it on maybe surface it on our like pre-customer product update emails or something. Just haven't done that lately, but it's still there.
Okay. I mean, that just seemed obviously correct to me.
Yeah.
Like you were saying like, yes, it's profitable on a per user basis almost always. And, you know, nets you new customers and you have a network effect product in a way. Or a semi-viral product. So
the amount of customers that, you know, you're potentially losing just because they feel like they're locked into, like they paid annual, like the company they're currently paying right now managed to optimize the term of their subscription and got them hooked into annual. Good for them. But like now they feel stuck. And like by the time that expires, they'll have probably forgotten about your solution. So like, and that's probably happening quite a bit.
And also, maybe even more importantly, honestly, I think is that it's remarkable. It's worth remarking on. Like people will notice it or share it because it's just interesting in its own right. But that's the kind of marketing that appeals to me. I think that's the kind of marketing that's most interesting and most effective too at our size. I don't know, most effective, but effective, I would say. It doesn't take a huge budget to think of something that's interesting enough that people will share it.
Right. It's actually hard to think of what would be an example of good marketing that's not remarkable, right? Like, I think maybe it is like a baseline requirement for good marketing, actually.
I would say so. I mean, this is what like Purple Cow is about.
Yeah, right.
It's sort of the core thesis. Yeah, I mean, I guess like paid ads maybe is like kind of the least remarkable version of this. But even then, if you made a really interesting ad, it gets more engagement, it gets more clicks, you know, like, is there anything that you want to make that's not interesting? Probably not, right?
Mm-hmm. maybe, yeah, like if you have just a kind of table stakes, you're just one of the many in the list that surfaces in the right place, like say in a list of ads or whatever. And maybe that would perform okay, but it seems like you could always optimize it by standing out more and being more remarkable. Seems like a good aim to have.
Going back to the Calendly thing, Stephen, our head of sales and success, threw out an idea that I really liked, which was building a lightweight Zoom app for Tuple to make it easier to, like, because we have some customers that have a very Zoom-based culture. Sometimes they'll be on a Zoom call to start to talk about stuff, and then it's like, oh, why don't we switch to Tuple for actual pairing? It's like, what if we just were in the app store? Similar for, like, I think it was VS Code has, like, an extension marketplace. And same idea, like, fire up a Tuple session from your IDE. I think being in the places people are is just kind of great, even if where they are is a competitor.
That sort of aligns with where I think SavvyCal is going to be heading more and more, is being in the places where people are already doing their work, you know? So like browser extensions are pretty high up on the priority list. People will randomly send me, these are usually like developers who are using SavvyCal. It's not like my standard kind of archetype of customer, I guess, but sometimes developers do use scheduling tools too. They'll send me little like macOS scripts that they use to like hook it into their command launcher, or just like all kinds of interesting little angles that developers have used to like wedge SavvyCal right into where they, you know, where they're already using their keyboard shortcuts or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, God, we need to lean into that more.
Yeah.
There's a thing I've been meaning to have us build for a long time. People will sort of come up with these ideas of like, it'd be really cool if Tuple would set up my Git config when I start pairing with someone so I can give them credit when we work on commits and are paired together, for example. Or it'd be great if when a Tuple call started, it would do these things to like prep my environment, for example. And those are all, I think, interesting, specific ideas around a general theme of that I think can be solved by giving people the equivalent of Git hooks for Tuple events. You can just put whatever scripts you want in your .tuple directory, named appropriately given the various lifecycle events of a Tuple session, and you could fire off whatever you want.
Oh man.
Right?
That's really powerful. Like say, you know, if you always wanted your window configuration to look a certain way as soon as you started sharing your screen for a pairing session or something, if you could just, yeah, like really ergonomically program that into Tuple so it's all automatic. Oof. That could be good.
Yeah. And then by building one thing, we have now made Tuple extensible. And now there are an effectively infinite list of things that you might do with that. And then that's something that we can then promote. Like, hey, this person made a great script to run when Tuple starts to do this useful thing. Here you go, everyone. Let's put a directory of these together.
That's really interesting. The platform play, sort of.
Yes, exactly. Tuple's a platform. We're going to go raise $50 million.
there you go.
Yeah. Becoming a platform, man.
It's interesting to watch like Matt Wensing do this with Summit. Him and I are kind of in a mastermind together, so we're constantly bouncing ideas and stuff. And just watching his strategically, like when he's building features, oftentimes he's building them in a way so that someone else, you know, a customer can build their own plugin as opposed to it being like static on his side and require code changes from developers on his end. And that really does unlock so much. I mean, it's not always the right move, but when done well, like it can really, really unlock a lot for the business, I think.
Totally. I'm also just a huge, I think that idea of extensibility, it's so much leverage. It's not even a lot of work for us to unlock this whole potential universe of outcomes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that's cool.
Right. That's also great because it like just leans into like developerness as well. Like I want to keep fleshing out that story of like, no, it's not just video conferencing, it's a pairing app. And then people go like, well, what makes it a pairing app? And we have some answers, but we could always use more. And not like just for marketing, obviously, because, you know, for product market fit, but also for marketing. I mean, it's great to have a product that's very, very tailored to your use case.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, I remember early on in the Tuple days, you were talking about like there being like a Tuple command line utility or something. So someone can like launch a pairing session right from their console. Did that ever materialize?
We have an Alfred script. So we have a URL scheme
mm-hmm.
that you can plug into. So like there's like an Alfred script that calls into that URL scheme.
Mm, okay.
It's fairly minimal and not widely used. We don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Our original plan on Linux was like, oh, we'll just do a command line version of tuple to avoid having to make a UI. But then we were like, actually, UIs are kind of useful.
They are kind of good. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fully command line driven tuple never materialized.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, I'm a developer, and there are definitely a lot of command line things that I use all the time. I'm always get through the command line, not through a UI, certain Heroku things. A lot of, for example, Heroku has a very extensive command line interface, but there's a lot of things where I just go into their UI to do certain things, as opposed to like trying to navigate through and like look at the man docs or whatever and try to like suss out, because I just don't use it enough to remember all of the different commands. And that's where a UI can really shine, you know. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, given our URL scheme, we could make a command line tool that at least kicked off a call, for example. I'm slightly skeptical it would get used a lot, but it seems like it might be interesting to try. But being where people are, that feels like part of that too. So you're in your terminal? No problem. You're in Alfred? Fine. You're in Zoom? Fine. Slack? Sure. Tuple is we have this advantage of being easy to switch to, because you can just start using it and inviting people and whatnot are relatively easy to switch to, at least compared to, like, you know, other enterprise type tools. It's tricky to get into people's workflows reliably. Like, you're asking someone just to more or less change how they normally do something. And that, you know, causes, like, asking for that change is just like a little bit of pain. And so the more we can smooth that path, I think the better our path goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about this with SavvyCal, like, cause I hear people telling me use cases like, okay, I have a group of partnership people from other organizations that I meet with all the time, for example. And we basically want to give each other permission to see our anonymized calendars, and so that we can quickly find times to meet with each other and just kind of do that on the fly. And it's still like a lot of steps to like set up SavvyCal links and then get them to off their calendars, and like there's just a bunch of steps involved with that. And that's where like one of my favorite potential features that we might build is something where you can like execute a command in a shared workspace Slack channel, and then everyone in there can just click a button to author calendars, and then we can like instantly show times that intersect with everybody. Like, cutting out a lot of the steps and making it really easy to form those connections between people, and not like explicitly require someone to like, okay, go to SavvyCal.com, go create an account, go create a scheduling link, then join my team, and then I'll add you to, like, that's just so much friction. But if we manage to just wedge ourselves right into the workflows, and it's like, we're just right there, and it's like very, like you trip over a rock and you fall into just using SavvyCal.
Right. You know? Yes.
That's what I want.
Totally. And it's those things that like seem like a small difference, but that could be a really big difference. We have an okay Slack integration. It's not amazing. And we don't really push it. But I think that small difference of, hey, there's an easy /tuple command, and that fires up a room that we can jump into, is one of those things that like really can actually change a lot what the adoption looks like. For workflow tools in particular, like removing friction just feels so important. Like, oh, this used to take 3 clicks and now it takes 2 clicks. I bet suddenly that thing gets done way more for a whole class of things.
Yeah. 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 Users are lazy and they don't want friction. They don't want steps.
Yeah, man.
And so cutting out just one can make a huge difference, I think.
For sure. I will do so much work to avoid doing some work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So I'm doing some yearly planning.
Okay.
I'm pretty excited about it. I have a doc called 2020.md. Or sorry, 2022.md. I'm into this new thing where you plan 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
And your plans are just 100% correct.
Right, right.
2022.md. Man, it's exciting. I'm feeling really kind of stoked, kind of ambitious. I feel like the team is really strong. The momentum is really strong. We have a list of ambitious but achievable goals on the product side, on marketing side, growth stuff, and hiring as well. I feel like my mindset is kind of shifting. And we haven't done a planning meeting yet. You know, Joel Spencer and I are all going to go for a offsite and talk it through. So I haven't exactly gotten buy-in yet, but I'm feeling like 2022 could be a year where we just take on a lot and invest a lot in the future of Tuple.
Ooh. Yeah. I like the sound of that. Is there anything more specific you can share about kind of the vision?
I don't really want to say too much about it because, again, you know, it's nascent and it's in my head and not socialized. But like, there have been hires that we've held off on. There have been features we've held off on. There have been platforms we've held off on. And it's just all feeling like, you know, I think we could just do this, and I think we could do it without burning anyone out or making it suck. I'm kind of feeling like pouring some of that profit into some of these things would reduce it for 2022, but could just make us hit 2023 at, you know, Mach 2.
What do you think is different now that like unlocks the ability for this level of ambition to not feel like overwhelming or make your work unfun? Is it that you have margin? Like, is there's enough money in the business to support this and it won't feel like a stressful thing? Or what do you think it is?
That's a good question. Yeah, I definitely partly margin, meaning like we could hire a few more people and it wouldn't hurt yet. It wouldn't be like, oh, this is getting a little close to break even. There's still margin in there, which definitely helps. I also think there's margin organizationally. Like, I think we're getting a bit better. Like, this will be a never ending process, but a bit better at like organizing a team of people around goals and tasks. So I'm starting to feel like, you know, we can maybe do a bit more than we are doing right now. And maybe more things simultaneously. I was thinking about this morning, just sort of personally, Tuple has hit a level where it's sort of achieved the goals that I had for it in a way initially, where it's like the business is strong. It's throwing off plenty of profit. I feel great about that. It's growing nicely. We did build a good product. People like it. You know, check. We're capable of that. We're capable of building a good business. Check. We're working on building a good company. You know, never-ending source of effort and improvement for sure, but like feeling like you're doing okay so far. So it's kind of like, okay, all the initial like why I wanted to start this company goals are more or less checked off. And so now I've been sort of asking myself, okay, so now what? What do I want now? Or what excites me now? So far, the thing that's feeling best to me is, well, what if we cranked it up a little bit?
That resonates because I think the alternative could potentially be boredom or stagnation, right? Like, what else would you be doing if you weren't being a bit more ambitious? You know, I mean, I suppose it could be like, if you had ambitions to like, to relax and go travel the world and spend time on beaches and not pay a bunch of attention to the company. Like some people, I guess that appeals, or at least on paper or in theory. But I think that's an important thing to realize about yourself. Like, what do you want to be like pushing yourself and being ambitious, or is now the time to like chill and like just harvest the gains, right?
Yeah, exactly. And to me, it doesn't feel like a chill time. Part of that is my life situation. Like, I don't have kids. I don't have a sick parent or someone that requires a lot of like care or attention or anything like that. I feel like I have space. And so I'm not ready for chill mode. I don't need chill mode right now. So for me, at least, the answer to what I want to do then is try new, harder things. You know, commit sins of ambition and, you know, maybe screw it up and probably make a bunch of mistakes along the way, but at least go for it and see what happens.
I'm feeling the same, I think, about what I want to do with SavvyCal. Like, it sort of had to make decisions in the last year of like, am I optimizing for purely lifestyle and minimizing the amount of time and energy and effort that I need to pour into this thing and trying to automate things? Or am I thinking a little bit bigger and like, I think it kind of came down to a similar calculus. Like, this, there's no reason for me not to be aiming a little bit higher. And it's honestly a lot of fun to do that. And it's a lot funner, especially once you get a little bit of escape velocity. I mean, reflecting back on like what the first few months of little Savvy Cal and my past prior projects that didn't work out so well. Like, it's just so agonizing to be in that phase where like everything's uncertain and you don't know if you're going to be able to get sustainable, repeatable growth. And so now that I have it, it's like, okay, I don't want to squander this. And there's no reason not to get the most out of this in a way that's like not, you know, I'm not looking to work 200 hours a week and completely burn myself out, but I think I can push pretty hard and still be like pretty happy and fulfilled.
That sounds plausible to me. I put a fair amount of time. I'm thinking about Tuple pretty much all the time, but I'm enjoying it. Like, it feels like a good stress to me. It's mostly quite enjoyable, even when it's hard. I sort of picturing like eventually I'm going to let the discus go or something, or like let the shot put go, and it's going to sail on its course. You know, that'll be all the acceleration I'm going to push into it. And, you know, we'll step away or sell it or who knows what, like some time in the future, perhaps unknown. But like, I feel like right now I'm in the, like the pushing phase, and like it's speeding up already, and it's got a nice acceleration, but I want to keep pushing really, really hard, because then when I do want to chill, there's so many options that are all good.
Yeah, I think that's important to be thinking about taking some off the table right now, just financially and like in all aspects, I guess, like making sure that you're still enjoying the journey and taking stock of what's happening now, but also keeping an eye for like for some kind of that future goal of being able to have that optionality. I think it's important to hold those two in balance.
Totally agreed. And we've been aggressive about taking stuff off the table already, like along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think we built that habit really early, and that was really good and useful. And now it's sort of at a point where it's like, maybe we don't need to optimize for that as much anymore. Maybe now is the time to make a bet, a slightly more future looking bet, and almost like doubling down in a way by leaving, like reinvesting more in the business. Mm-hmm. I'm psyched to sort of feel this in myself. Like, there have been times over the previous years where it just felt like, no, we should just grow slowly and figure stuff out. And like, you know, hire very slowly and don't take on too much. And like, we can intentionally not do all these complicated things because it's fine for now. We don't necessarily need them. I'm starting to feel myself flip in that other direction.
Yeah, I think that's probably experience and growth that's happening in you. Like, I mean, I think about the problems that you're dealing with now. If you had to deal with those 3 years ago, you know, they'd seem daunting. Like, oh my gosh, how do I manage a team of that size and make sure everyone's, you know, happy and fulfilled and staying on the trajectory that we want to go and aligned with the vision and all those things. And like, I think that is one of the benefits of growing companies like we're trying to do, where it's like, it'd be hard to, you know, raise a bunch of venture capital and then get to the place that you're at, like right now, in terms of like dealing with the scale of your company, but having to deal with that when you haven't grown into it naturally and organically.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, that feels super true to me. Like, I feel like we had to make a bunch of mistakes at smaller scales to feel comfortable, like bumping it up to the next level. That's always what felt wrong about raising a bunch of money and then hiring really fast to me, is that assumption that you can then take that organization and do a lot more with it than you could have if you went a bit slower. Like, if you've done it before, that seems like, sure, yeah, why not take the shortcut? But I feel like for me, I didn't feel like I could handle that so much.
Yeah. And I think it's, even if you have experience, I think it's just hard to pull off like pushing beyond kind of the organic growth level. I was just chatting with an engineer that I'm thinking about hiring, and like talking about how at his current situation, you know, the team has grown fast, and like a lot of his teammates were hired in the last 12 months. And it's just like, yeah, I kind of feel like I don't know a lot of the people I'm working with. And I think it's made overall his job a little bit less fun, just kind of feels more disconnected. And I compare that against, you know, probably the way your team's grown, the way I've kind of slowly added, you know, people to my team. And it's just like, it's so nice when things go at more of an organic pace, and you don't end up with those problems of like, there's a bunch of people here and I don't really know anybody, but we're all supposed to work together and be productive. And I don't know.
Totally. Yeah.
It's hard to force.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even just management ability. Mm-hmm. It's like human nature and trust. Yeah, proclivity and how well do people know and like each other?
Yeah, inherently those things just take time, and to try to shortcut that for hypergrowth seems like pretty difficult to actually overcome. And I doubt a lot of companies are actually doing that super well, you know, even the ones that are growing fast. And I think I wouldn't want to opt into that for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I said it, but I want to like really emphasize, like I'm still learning this. I don't feel like I'm going to like just like charge into this and do it perfectly at all, or that I'm doing perfectly now. Lots to learn for sure. And B, a big part of what's giving me that feeling about the ability to do the next phase is the people that we have added to the team. It's like, okay, this sounds overwhelming for three of us, but for eight of us, with like the rock stars, not really, shouldn't hate that word, with the awesome people that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
With the ninjas that we got, a lot more feels possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big piece of it. It's like, oh, I can see how like slotting, I've said this before, but I'm now feeling the visceral thing of like, oh, adding an amazing person to the team in a given role can really just have a huge impact on the company. And it's like, okay, well, what other roles are we missing where we could hire awesome people? It's like a bunch of them. There's no marketing department at Tuple. Like a core business function is no one's full-time job.
Yeah, I think you're starting to kind of see the potential and feeling like you have kind of the bandwidth to focus on those areas. Like, you know, gradually, like the work has been spread out among your team, and it's like, it's pretty, I'm excited for you that it's like, you feel like you can give thought to that, like engineering the different parts of the organization, I guess, and figuring out how to capitalize on what's already going on in Tuple.
Yep. And I think we're like pretty solidly a post product market fit company. Like the product doesn't work for everyone, but a lot of the times it works for people and they like it quite a bit. We have a lot of raving fans and we're going to make it a lot better. It feels like, well, a big part of the task should now be making sure a lot of people try it, hear about it, know about it, have success when they try it, are supported when they start a trial,
you know,
are smoothly upsold into expensive enterprise plans when they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of company structure to build around that, given that the product, like, you know, this is the classic like VC backed startup playbook, right? Is get product market fit, then scale. And it's like, well, we're not trying to do all that in, you know, 18 months. It took us a bit longer, but I think we're kind of hitting that scale phase. It's a cool time.
In this doc, this markdown file, how is it structured? Is it just like a list of ideas? Do you have sections? Do you have specific areas that you're trying to plan around? Or
the sections are product goals, the top of which is what are our six big blog posts for the year from our conversation with Adam. Then a list of smaller things to improve, just a bunch of smaller feature or ideas or improvements. And there is a growth and marketing goals section. So like revenue growth goal, some growth ideas to try, some marketing things I want to do. Then there is a hiring plan. The first sentence of which is, let's do all the above, but without burning anyone out.
There you go.
So it's like, okay, who do we need to hire to tackle this admittedly ambitious list of ideas? And then a kind of high-level vision for 2022 section. Like, what is the theme? What are we trying to do? And then I have a retreat agenda section, which is, okay, so when we actually sit down and talk about this, what do we have to make sure we cover?
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds quite comprehensive. I like it. I might copy that structure.
Oh, no, please don't. I really would appreciate it.
It's proprietary.
This is extremely proprietary.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah.
It was great to have a doc that I kind of could just keep dumping stuff into. Started it on a plane trip and then just kind of kept opening it and throwing stuff in there and deleting stuff and editing. And it's my like get excited document.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you'll talk it over with your co-founders. Then how much of that do you think will get shared with the team?
I don't think I have any hesitations around sharing all of it. It's loose right now. It's structured a bit, but then there's just a lot of like, you know, single line rough ideas in there. If the CEO sends the 2022 plan, it should probably not be quite so sloppy as it is right now. But in terms of like the themes and the big things and the stuff that has been considered, I definitely would want to share all of it.
Yeah. Seems like that could have a contagious effect on the rest of the team too. If it's your excitement, Doc, then I think it seems like it'd be a good thing to transfer that excitement to the rest of the team as well.
Strong agree. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
As I'm learning more and more, like this is a key part of my job. This is a key part of being a CEO and running an organization is being like, okay, so what are we going to do here? And why is that exciting? Or like, why should we care? Yeah, I think not setting yearly goals would be a big mistake for an organization of this size.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
But oh man, it's a lot of work. We got a lot of there's a lot of things on here.
Yeah.
But if the hiring plan works, then we could probably do it. I'm also sort of, in general terms, I'm thinking more and more. So right now we are working on removing the credit card requirement to do a trial. So this is an experiment we're going to run. The goal is to ship it by December 1st. So that should be happening soonish. And that is part of a larger theme that I want to adopt, which is like really leaning into the way Tuple is purchased and like the way we can grow and just leaning into the like product-led growth idea, which is I'm basically imagining this like massive top of funnel. Like how do we just make it just like cavernous at the top and get tons of people trying it? And as the funnel moves down and then like hopefully converting lots of those into normal self-serve team accounts, subscriptions, and cherry picking the best ones or the ones that raise their hands into giant enterprise accounts as well.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this sort of screams like Tuple has the potential to be like a really strong freemium play at some point, I think,
yeah.
Because, you know, if someone just wants to like use it to connect with one person, I could see you just giving that away for free. But as soon as you're doing the teaming stuff, you know, it's just so natural. Like if you know, me and Adam Wathen want to like pair on something, like, I don't know if that's literally all we're doing, then we could do that for free. But inevitably, you know, the value will become obvious to us and it'll be like, I want to use this at work with my team. And then like, that's when you graduate into a paid plan. And in the meantime, while we're like doing our peer-to-peer pairing, that's not actually costing like you infrastructure costs, right? Because it's P2P. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
I've been thinking about that. And I know Matt Wensing is screaming at me right now because he's been telling me to do this for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
But what if a call between two people was free? And if you wanted to add a third, that puts you on the standard plan. And if you wanted to go beyond that, that puts you on enterprise. And the cap is number of participants on a call, right? The gating function.
Are most pairing calls just between two people, or do they generally have more participants?
I don't actually know. That's the thing I should know.
Yeah. Well, you should definitely know it before you make a pricing change.
Nah. YOLO. Just ship it. Back just in the early, it. Yeah, we used to do that. One day pricing changes.
Yep.
Piss Joel right off.
Yep. Yeah.
I would just walk in and be like, all right, I'm excited about this idea. Let's go. Make a new branch.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. A little more careful these days. But yes, yawning chasm of top of funnel, slowly narrowing to paid and even more to enterprise. And thinking about feeding the beast of sales or a sales team that understands product-led growth and upselling to enterprise and having the right features in there to pull people into it just feels like a good, pretty good model to me.
Yep. There's no reason why Tuple shouldn't be installed on every developer's computer, you know?
Oh,
and right?
What if you're right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of... I mean, I haven't seen it in the wild yet, which I find very annoying. Yeah, I haven't seen it installed on someone's computer that I just happened to shoulder surf yet, and I find that very upsetting.
Dang.
Someday, I really want this to happen, you know, very organically. It can't be manufactured.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, that's the true reason to do freemium.
Yep.
For the ego boost.
For the ego boost. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the real reason.
That's where that's the phase we're at. You know, that's the top of the Maslow's hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Is stroking the CEO's ego.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this was a lot of feelings.
Yeah, this was a good one. Yeah.
We should come with no agenda more often.
Yeah, I know. And here we solicited some questions from listeners. And so we have a couple that we could touch on. We didn't get to them today, but keep them in the hopper.
Yeah, I'll save that URL so we can come back to it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it was nice reflecting with you.
Yeah, good catching up as always.
Yeah, notes of the show.
Notes of the show can be found at artofproductpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.